So today we're going to be in Revelation 12 and 13. And so I don't know about you, but there's in the culture today, there's a lot of talk and movies and TV shows on superheroes. Like there's a new movie out now. It's a Spider-Man movie that I just saw. But there's the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And today we're really kind of, that's going to be the motif for today. Because things in Revelation 12 and 13 are just so supernatural that there really isn't anything in my life that even comes close to this. So I said, well, this is kind of the superhero motif where you've got a set of good guys and you got a set of bad guys, the villains and then the heroes. So within a good superhero story, you obviously have several elements in there. You've got to have a villain and his team. If you see my slide here, I think you could probably figure out who the villains. I turned the lights off. Maybe I need to turn off some more on this one. The key's back there. But here's villain number one, and here he is again. And you're going to have some good guys. And so here's one of them, and here's actually another one. And the good guys usually are outnumbered. I don't know if you noticed these movies. The good guys usually have, almost always have extraordinary powers, equipment, or skills. Like Spider-Man, he's got his webs, and he's really sticky. Superman, obviously, superhero strength. You've got Thor and his hammer. And you've got, Captain America and his shield. And that's all he's got, I guess. But they all have, superpowers. Also, you get sidekicks. And so in this one, he's a superhero too, but this is an angel, Michael the Archangel. With the sidekicks, Iron Man has Happy Hogan. Does Spider-Man have a sidekick? I don't know. Batman does. Alfred has a... Robin, of course. How could I forget Robin? Batman and Robin. Who else? They always have like a sidekick that's there. So there's the sidekicks, and then there's always a secret identity. Ever notice that? They always have like a mask or something like that. And so here on this one, you don't see angels too much, and God and Jesus is there always, but he's usually not present physically. But it can be. So these superheroes, they have superhero strength. They've got superpowers, and they're fighting usually a group of bad guys. And so, also the last thing I always forget this one, usually in these superhero movies, there's a damsel in distress. Right? You got Superman with Lois Lane. You got Spider-Man and Mary Jane or MJ. Now, in the Marvel, they kind of decided to let the damsel pick up a shield and a sword or whatever and start fighting too. But normally, there usually is a damsel in distress to make it. And so, sure enough, we have our damsel in distress right here that we're going to hear about. So, that's usually the key elements in any superhero movie or superhero story, comic. So, let's go ahead and get started in Revelation 12 and 13. Call it the woman, the child, the testimony, and the dragon. So turn with me to Revelation 12. We'll start us off in the first verse. Now a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, the moon under her feet, and on her head a garland of 12 stars. Then being with child, she cried out in labor and in pain to give birth. And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great fiery red dragon having 7 heads, and 10 horns, and 7 diadems on his head. His tail drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth, and the dragon stood before the woman who was ready to give birth to devour her child as soon as it was born. She bore a male child who was to rule over all the nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up to God and his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness where she was, where there has a place prepared by God that she should feed her there, 1,260 days. Okay, I'm going to go back. Well, actually, I'll just stay on this slide. It's pretty good. So we have our woman. So first of all, there's a sign. A sign is a symbol pointing to something else. It's usually less than what it's pointing to. So this is figurative language. The Bible clearly states that this is a sign. It's in the heavens. It can be here on earth, but it's a symbol. So the woman actually isn't a woman, but it points to one. And I think based on this that this really is symbolic of the nation of Israel. So here we have the woman. And then we get, there's the dragon. And I don't know if you can see, but it has seven heads and 10 crowns and a diadem. So this really means authority, that the dragon has authority, a crown. The diadem is starting about authority. And he really, really dislikes the woman, in this case, the nation of Israel. The nation of Israel gives birth to a son. This is, we read about Mary, and that's the child. And I'll back up a slide if it goes, oops. And the child is Jesus. You can tell that by rules with iron. It goes back to heaven, is seated with God. And so we've got the major players here. The 12 stars above her head are supposed to represent the 12 nations of 12 tribes of Israel. And here you can see the seven heads on the dragon, kind of a completeness that he's there and he has authority. All right, going back to the woman. There are several women that are symbolized in Revelation. In chapter 2, verse 20, we get Jezebel, who represents paganism. The scarlet woman we'll hear about later in the summer. In chapter 17, she symbolizes the apostate church. And then we get that's in chapter 17, and then the wife of the Lamb, chapter 19, symbolizing the true church. And this first symbol here is the nation of Israel. 12 stars, we mentioned that it's the 12 tribes of Israel. And so you're probably saying, well, Bob, how do you know that? Well, if we go to Genesis chapter 37, verses 9 through 11, this is the dream that Joseph had. So Joseph is one of the 12 sons of 12 tribes of Israel. And he says in verses 9 through 11, Genesis 37, 9 through 11, then he dreamed still another dream and told to his brothers and said, look, I have a dream. I have dreamed another dream. In this dream, the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bow down to me. So he told it to his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall our mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to the earth before you? And his brothers envied him, and his father kept the matter in mind. So you can see there, and there's several other references to Israel, first of all, being a woman. It's just all throughout Isaiah and Jeremiah, where Israel is unfaithful and she's compared to an adulteress. There's several prophets. I'm trying to remember the one that had Gomer as a wife, Hosea maybe, that she was viewed as unfaithful. And so Israel goes through her history of being faithful and unfaithful, mostly unfaithful. But she's spoken of in the feminine sense. And there's many others, but I just decided to pick that one. So I have pretty high confidence that the woman here is the woman is the nation of Israel, but there could be more. So that's the thing with symbolism, that it could be that, but there could be other things too. So you're probably questioning about the moon and the sun. So Joseph, in his dream, Jacob alludes to himself and Rachel as the sun and the moon, bowing to him. But in Israel, there's a lot on, when it comes to worship, there's a lot on new moons. And here I put in 1 Chronicles chapter 23, verse 31, and it says, and at every presentation of a burnt offering to the Lord on the Sabbath, and on the new moons, and on the set feast, by the number according to the ordinances governing them, regularly before God. Ezra chapter 3, verse 5, it's not up there, I'll just read it to you. Afterwards, they offered the regular burnt offerings and those new moons, and for all the appointed feasts for the Lord, that were consecrated, and those of everyone who willingly offered a freewill offering to the Lord. Psalm 81, verse 3 says, blow the trumpet at the time of the new moon, at the new moon our solemn feast day. So in the Jewish calendar, it's a lunar calendar. It's based on 28 days, not the 30, 31 days we have in our Gregorian. And so the new moon is very big in the Old Testament. And we see that here in Revelation 12 with the moon and the sun behind her. Let me go back. You can kind of see it here, the sun, and then there's a moon below here. That's not a good picture. This is a little bit better. That's big. Okay. Make sure I get to that. Okay. So in 12:4, it talks about a third of the stars of heaven. So Satan's original rebellion resulted in a third of the angelic host who joined his insurrection in becoming demons. So he's thrown down to the earth. That's his punishment. He has a definitely a long-standing hatred for the woman, and you see this right off the bat in Genesis with Adam and Eve, where there is a prophecy God gives that the woman in this case mentions Eve, but you see this over where he will crush Satan's head under her feet. So there's that's a mortal wound, by the way. So there is just this deep animosity the dragon has for the nation of Israel, for Eve, for women, and that's probably a whole new sermon. But he's really upset. But he can't do anything against her. He punishes her and he makes her life really hard. But he's never able to vanquish her. And you can see that through all of human history, even inside the Bible and outside the Bible, in the book of Esther, where there's Haman who. There's an Agagite who wants to. He tries to wipe out the nation of Israel using the king Nebuchadnezzar at the time. Doesn't sound right. Xerxes, and he almost succeeds. Where he puts out a proclamation. So this is after the Babylonian captivity, where he says, "Hey, on this date, we're gonna wipe out all Israel." And you're going to take all the wealth from Israel and transfer it to the treasury. And so you see that the nation of Israel is almost wiped out then. Before that, in the Exodus, the nation of Israel is crossing through the Red Sea, and Pharaoh is out to get them. And so there's just on and on and on. Outside of the Bible, Israel is persecuted, whether it be the Inquisitions, Western Europe, the pogroms in Eastern Europe and Russia. The most famous and that are recent is the Holocaust with Germany. So there's just this continuing state of persecution against Israel. And that's not by accident. I mean, name a people group that has seen that type of opposition. And is this old? You don't talk about the Hittites or the Egyptians like this. And so there is, you could just tell that there's a supernatural element here. There's a supernatural persecution. Why is it that the nation of Israel today is surrounded by enemies on all sides? You know, they supposedly have peace treaties, but they're always in a continual state of war. It's probably one of the toughest neighborhoods in the planet where she's at. And that's not by accident. And that's really a result of the dragon and his fiery opposition, his just extreme hatred for her. All right, let's keep going. We're going to go Revelation 12. Let's start on verse 7. So Satan is thrown out of heaven, and a war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought. But they did not prevail, nor was there a place found for them in heaven any longer. So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil, Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast to earth, and his angels were cast out with him. All right, let's talk about Michael a little bit. I got a picture of him up here. This is just a stone representation. It may or not be true. Michael is an archangel. He's called one of the chief princes that is associated with the children of Israel. Here in Daniel 12, verse 1, I went ahead and put this up here. At that time, Michael shall stand up, and the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was seen there was a nation. Even to that time, at that time, your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book. And so here's a representation of Michael. A lot of theologians think of him as the chief prince, closely associated with the children of Israel. He's kind of like their archangel, their protector. And he stands watch over Israel. And here he battles the devil and his angels. With God makes a decree and says, there's no longer a place for you in the heavens. So we know that, you know, for example, in the book of Job, the devil still had access to heaven, the third heaven. And he's up there and he's always accusing the saints. Well, here in Revelation, he's cut off. He's no longer has access to heaven. He's out. Him and his angels are thrown. And that's this picture right here. You see his angels being thrown, the demons being thrown to earth, being cast out. I really like this picture over here. It's got a little dark, but this is a picture of Satan, the devil, the dragon. And you see how he's an angel, and then you see his angel, his wings falling off. And I do believe this is just my interpretation. This, you know, can take it for whatever you're worth. It's not inspired. When him and his demons are cast out of hell or out of heaven, I think he loses a lot there. I think he loses his angelic appearance. He's done that, and you see that here. He may not lose it. He may still have it here on earth. He may have lost it right at the beginning, but there's something he loses. It talks about, hopefully I have it written here. Jude 9, let me bring this up. Yet Michael, the archangel, contending with the devil when he disputed about the body of Moses, dared I bring against him a reviling accusation, but said, the Lord rebuke you. So is that, let me make sure if I have it here. No, I didn't. I think this is something I remember. But he's always battling Michael I'm trying to remember what book it was, the King of Tyre, and it preludes to him, and it talks about, he had majesty and beauty, but then his pride got in the way, and it was a kind of an interlude for the King of Tyre. Can't remember what book that was, but he loses a little bit there. He loses a lot, but it talks about how Michael is battling with him. But you know, we're probably thinking, well, what does that deal with me? So you know, with demons and Satan, you know, God never really tells us to do battle with them. We're not supposed to be taking up a sword and that, but it does tell us to put on the full armor of God and to stand against him. In Ephesians 6, verse 10, it starts off, finally be strong in the Lord and his mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's scheme. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this darkness, dark world, and against the spiritual forces in the heavenly realms. John 16:33 says, I've told you these things that you may have peace. In this world you have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. Revelation 2, verse 10, it says, do not bring any of these things which you are about to suffer. Indeed, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison that you may be tested, and you will have tribulation 10 days, but be faithful until death, and I will give you the crown of life. Psalm 96, 2, sing to the Lord, bless his name, proclaim the good news of his salvation day to day. So, We're not Michael the archangel that does battle with the devil, but we're called to stand against him and realize that he has specific temptations and trials for us. So it's not going to be easy. When we'll see this, especially in chapter 13 and also 12, that in this superhero movie where the villain is out there and that we're standing against him, that the good guys lose. There's persecution, there is imprisonment, there's going to be death on our side. But when you, if you just look at it from the earthly perspective, it looks like, wow, the devil is really winning. He's not. He's on a big losing streak. And he just continues to lose over and over when you look at the totality of it. Here, he loses access to the heaven. He no longer can bring accusation. And you're probably wondering, well, what was he doing bringing accusation? He's just firing, like, how can you possibly be associated with them? Look at all the sins they do. Now he's cut off. He can no longer bring those accusations. And you know why? Because we're going to read about the blood of the Lamb and the word of his testimony. All right, let's go to Revelation 12, verses 10 through 12. Then I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ have come, for the accuser of our brethren who accused them before for our God day and night has been cast down. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony. They did not love their lives to the death. Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you having great wrath because he knows that his time is short. All right. You notice I put a wash basin here that has the blood and the garments are coming out white. And that's really, if there was really one summation in this whole, in this sermon, it's this. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony. And that's all you really need to know on this. So there's a lot of the bad guys and all his stuff that he's doing, all the things that are there. But it's really about the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. And we know about the blood of the Lamb and what Jesus did on the cross, but he decided to use us, our testimony, as a way to defeat Satan and all his evil forces and all his plots. So the reason why he no longer has access to heaven is because he can no longer bring accusations. It's pointless, though. He just says, by the way, already been paid, blood of the Lamb. And so he really doesn't have a case anymore. He's basically been thrown out of the court of heaven. He's like, you're done. You can no longer bring accusations. You're to the earth now. I've already paid in full. And I just think that's just awesome that he decides to use us, our testimony. It talks about here, it says, and by the word of their testimony, they did not love their lives to the death. And you kind of, that's a sign here that in the tribulation time period with the saints that are there, that the church is raptured up, but there's still going to be believers that are going to believe in God after the church is taken up to heaven. And it says that they overcome him by the word of their testimony, that God chooses to use us in this great epic struggle between good and evil. Even though when you look at it from the earth's perspective, boy, Satan looks like he's winning. You're going to see more and more of this. He's going to have all this power and authority, but he's actually losing big time. All right. On to chapter 13. Okay, in Revelation. Let's go ahead and get started there. We're going to see, now this is the part about, you know, the superhero movie. This is the villain side now. So we saw the dragon and his seven heads and his 10 crowns and the diadem of it. So that's authority. He has crowns. And so now we're going to catch up to the rest of his super, his villain squad. And so we're going to see the beast of the sea that's described very heavily in Daniel. We're going to have the false prophets and then his worldwide system of control, which is the mark of the beast, the 666. So let's go ahead and start it, Revelation 13, starting in verse 1. And I stood on the stand of the sea and saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and 10 horns, and on his horns 10 crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. The dragon gave him power, his throne, and great authority. Daniel chapter 7, verse 7 talks about this. It says, After this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. So this beast here, this is just an artistic representation. It's got the 7 heads, and then if you count, there's 10 crowns. That's just, they could represent any number of things. It's many. There's a ton of interpretations out there, and all of them, some of them can be right, some of them can be wrong. Some people say that these are 7 kingdoms, 7 heirs, and then these are 10 crowns or 10 authorities, 10 people, 10 kings that are there. You have here the body of a leopard. Some people say that represents a certain kingdom in the past. There's the feet of a bear. Some people say that could represent Persia. The head of a lion. Some people say that parts of this beast that are in Daniel represent the Greek kingdoms, and they could be true. That's my only problem with that is that those are kind of a Western civilization view of that. So this gospel, the New Testament is written to all of mankind. And it may not necessarily have represent certain specific kingdoms. But we do know that there is a beast. He is from the sea. The sea is the devil standing on the sand of the sea. The sea, there's a lot of interpretation on that. Some people think of that as the Mediterranean Sea, right on the side of Israel. Back in the Old Testament times, would view the sea with fear and suspicion. They would always use other people's sailors. They would not use their own because of fear there. The mouth has the mouth of a lion. There's great power, great authority, super destructive feel about this. And he's the first one. He's the first part of this nemesis group of villains that you're going to see in the end time. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 3 and 4 have a lot on here. Let's read that. Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless the falling away comes first and the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped. And he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. So the beast, he's described in many places. He's called the son of perdition, kind of like Judas. He's a blasphemer. So first and foremost, he is really going to say things that are very negative against God. One of the 7 heads on this beast is slain. It's a counterfeit to Jesus' resurrection. This is something that's really big in this time. It's this huge. It's this. The slain head is something that is a blasphemous. It's a recreation. He's a counterfeiter. So the devil, the dragon, never comes up with anything original. He's always counterfeiting things. He's always making stuff up. But this one's going to be very powerful. The unbelievers worship him because the dragon gives him great authority, and he's extremely powerful. He makes war with the saints and overcomes them. Remember I talked about that this is not, you got the good guys, the villains, and then the good guys, that with him, with the beast, and we're going to read about his false prophet and his system of control, he does overcome the saints. But that's from, if you look at it just from the earth's perspective, it's like, wow, Satan's really winning, but he's not. He's, like I said, he's on a super big losing streak. And you'll see that here in a minute. So let's go ahead and go to the next part of the super villain team, and that is the false prophet. Okay, the beast from the earth. Starting on verse 11, then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had 2 horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. And he exercises all authority of the first beast in his presence. And he causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. He performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, and the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. All right, so the second member of this false trinity is the false prophet. I thought this picture was really good. It's just kind of like who he is. He's a mocker. He's a counterfeiter, and he counterfeits the lamb. But you see, he's not a lamb. He speaks. He looks like a lamb, and he speaks like a dragon. And that's where you see the teeth. You see the horns here. So he's weaker than the first beast. He originates from the abyss below. He's controlled by a powerful demon. He's subtle. He's winsome. But he directs everything to the first beast. He's a counterfeiter. He's a false Christ. He masquerades as the Lamb of God. The two smaller horns show that he's not as powerful as the first beast. But he does make an image of the Antichrist. He's all about abolishing world religions, all the other world religions out there. And he's going to replace them with the worship of the Antichrist, which is the Antichrist gets his authority from the devil. And this is really their last hurrah. All right, so this graphic here really represents everything about this time period that I think it really sums it up. You get the dragon here on the left side with the seven heads, and he gives his authority to the beast. The beast, the Antichrist, has the political power. He's the one that is controlling the nations. But then the false prophet here, he's got the forked tongue and the horns. He's deceiving all the peoples out there. He's creating this system of worship for the devil and his beast. The two beasts are like imitations. They represent a false Christ. They represent a false John the Baptist, where they're really all about, it's a counterfeit. It's a mirage. It's a fake deal. And to sum it up, they have this system that they create. And there's a ton of speculation on this system that we're going to read about, the mark of the beast. One thing I can tell you is that when it's out there, the Christians that are out there will know it. And if you take the mark, then it's like, once you take that mark, it never goes away. I think it alters you spiritually and maybe even genetically, where you're maybe not even human anymore. It's you see the manifestation in the hand and in the head, and so it's something that once you take this mark, this system, once you go into it, you never come out. All right. So in Revelation 13, verses 16 through 18, I'll read it here. I didn't write it down. He causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, and that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast on, or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. His number is 666. All right, so like I said, a lot of speculation out there. People, you know, get their calculators out, and they try to, oh, well, this thing fits and that thing fits. And they come up with a lot of different theories on what the mark of the beast is. And I decided to like really just call it a question mark, that it's not here yet. We certainly can see kind of images of what it could look like, but we don't know. The mark of the beast, it's there's a lot of speculation. So first of all, it's given to those who support and worship the Antichrist. So, nowadays, it's hard, just from looking at people, it's hard to tell who's a Christian and who's not. Well, it's going to be obvious in that time. They're going to have this mark. Some people say it's this microchip that they put in your hand, and that's going to be your way you buy and sell goods. And I think it's going to be more than that. I think just have, because you could technically take that thing out. Once you get this mark, it really just becomes part of you, and there's no going back. That's why I think it's something that alters your spirit. It alters your genetics. Maybe you're not even, you're human, but you're not quite human anymore. So that's why I think that the technology quite isn't there yet. But I could be wrong. That's just speculation on my part. One thing I do know is the mark of the beast will be used to conduct economic and business transactions, so buying and selling. So if you don't take the mark in this time, you can't go to the grocery store, and you can't go to Walmart, you can't do buying and selling. So it's going to be super hard for the saints then to live. This is going to be a worldwide system. And I kind of see a little bit of that now. I see the shadows of that, where, you know, right now the bastion, the linchpin that prevents this from really kicking in is the paper currency, cash, where you can still buy and sell with cash. I think that you're going to have to get rid of that. It's all going to have to be electronic for this thing to work. And you see that now. There's countries in Europe that are trying to adopt a cashless system, and where there's no buying and selling, and where, you know, with the press of a keyboard stroke, somebody could be completely just cut off. And so that system now, it doesn't exist now, but this is going to be a worldwide system. So I think we're many years away from that right now, because there's places in, you know, countries in Africa, in South America, islands, that you still have currencies out there. And so this mark that's out there, that the mark of the beast, this 666 system, still has a ways to go, but it's coming fast. I mean, you can see the images of it, the shadows of it coming. Fact number three, the false prophet, the second beast, is the one who causes and convinces everybody to embrace the mark of the beast. The false prophet will convince every social and economic status to receive the mark, rich or poor, young or old. So this is going to be a worldwide system. It's going to be caught up in it. You know, nowadays we hear and read about some of the social networking sites where they say, okay, you're banned, you're off. Well, this is going to be much, much worse than that. Like they took down ads that were pro-life, or, you know, that were overtly Christian. Well, this is going to be a system that really just completely gets rid of anything Christian out there. Number four, the mark is literal and physical on the hand or the forehead. Can't be removed. You can't buy and sell. So this is something that is going to be there. It's a physical mark, and it can't be removed. The mark of the beast will exist or be given during the seven-year tribulation. So at some point, this is, I believe that the church is out. You know, there's some people that believe that the church is still there, but we've talked about this several Sundays ago. I think the bride of Christ doesn't have to go through this. This isn't going to be dragged through this. But the saints, the 144,000 that are here, the people that convert, that know God, will still have to be all put up with this. So the people who refuse the mark of the beast will be persecuted and most likely killed for refusing the mark. So whether if they're not starved out of existence, then they're going to be persecuted, because they'll be just like, why don't you join the club? You know, sometimes I hear that at work. Well, hey, if you don't get on the wagon, you're going to get run over. And it's going to be like that. Hey, why don't you accept this? And he's going to have all this power. He's going to call fire down from heaven. He's going to, the false prophet's going to have this image, and it's going to be of the Antichrist or the beast, and it's going to, like a puppet, he's going to make it come to life, and it's going to be very convincing. And so that technology is not quite here yet either. But so there's going to be this horrible system. So you kind of see the team of the bad guys. You got the devil, the great dragon, who's going to come after the Israel. You've got the Antichrist, the beast of the sea. You've got the false prophet, that looks like a lamb, and then you've got here all their followers, and I don't know if you can see it. You probably can't see it, but each one of these people have a 666 on their hand. And so that's going to be the mark of the beast and his worldwide system of control. All right, you're thinking, man, Bob, that's really negative. That's not super, like, are you sure we're winning? Well, we are. Christ is still on the throne. He's still in control. He's winning. And the devil looks like he's winning. Like, if you look at when Christ was crucified on the cross, you know, this is what the devil wanted. Remember, the dragon was after the woman and her child, you know, with he tries to kill the child with Herod and the killing of the innocents, and he thinks he's won. It's like, yeah, I finally got him. And then 3 days later, oh, what's this? And all the people he had that were enslaved in Sheol, suddenly come out, and he's just like, what is happening? I think this is going to be it too. He gets thrown to earth. He's like, oh, I don't have access to heaven, but now I've got this worldwide system of control. I'm finally going to win. And no, it's not, because he's still on the throne. He's still in control. And there's going to be an elite team of superheroes, special forces, you want to call it, Navy SEALs, that come to earth, that God chooses. He already uses angels to throw devil and all his stuff out of earth, out of heaven. He's done. He's the losing streak continues, but God chooses to use a band of 144,000 supernatural evangelists from the nation of Israel. These are Jews that are going to come, and they're going to have the gifts of the Spirit. They're going to heal. They're going to prophesy. They're going to be like the special forces of Christendom. They're going to take on the beast and take on his worldwide system of control. And from the earth's perspective, our side, the good guy's side, they're going to be losing. They're going to be martyred. They're going to be persecuted. It's going to be really, really tough. But you know what? He's on the throne, and the story isn't done yet. So Jeff's going to tackle chapter 14 with 144,000 next week. But just to let you know that the good guys are here. Here's Jesus. Here's 144,000. You see the cross. You see the stream coming into the earth. That it's not over yet. The bad guys have a pretty bad team. But Jesus is still on the throne. He's still in control. He's still sovereign. He's still, he knows what's going on. It may look bad from our perspective, but he's still winning. And if you're martyred, there's this heavenly oasis. There's the crown of life. It's amazing. So, and then how do we overcome the devil and all his stuff? By the blood of the Lamb and the word of his testimony. And it's about our testimony. It's like, what has God done for us? And how do we share that? So we'll get that off next week. But now what I want to do is just offer a time. If there's anybody out there that doesn't have Jesus in their heart, that blood of the Lamb, that hasn't been washed, where you see this, oops, I went the wrong way. It was the wash basin of the, yeah, keep going. Yeah, they're right there. That hasn't had their garments cleaned. And it seems odd, doesn't it? That you think you put your garments in and it's the blood of the Lamb and it comes out white as snow. That's something that doesn't seem right. But if there's anybody out there that doesn't have that supernatural gifting, that the blood of the Lamb, that Spirit of God in their hearts, offer the opportunity right now after the service to come up, and we can certainly talk about that. Myself or any of the elders here, do that. So, all right, let's go ahead and close in prayer and have. We went a little long, let's close in prayer and have some potluck. Oh, Heavenly Father, I thank you for this day. Oh Lord, I pray that you are in control. That even though the devil has all these systems and villains and the beast and the false prophet and this system of control, this mark of the beast, the 666, that you are still sovereign. You know what's going on, and that we can just rely on you. That you are our lamp, a light unto our paths. That you are our stronghold. That you are the strength of our life. Why should we be afraid? Just protect us. Give us a good rest of the week. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. All right.